is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Past the hour is Primetime Sports, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. Coast to coast on the Fan Radio Network on Sirius Channel 97 and on Rogers Sportsnet in high definition. Look at this. Damian Cox to my left, Stephen Brunt across the table. Have you ever sat over there?
Yes. Yes, I have. In the olden days. Maybe not in this building.
When you were a bit player?
No, yes. In this building too, yes.
Here's a question. We narrowed it down. It would have been 2004. Last time
you were here,
I was here with His Royal Highness.
Is that how long it's been?
When would you and I have last sat down at a radio dais?
We probably did in 2004, though, didn't we? Because I was coming probably for a roundtable or something. I would think.
When did you leave to go to the enemy?
Oh, that was 2000. And, that was 2001.
How'd that go?
I have a nice summer house.
Which is the only way you can look at
someone. That's how I always look at it, believe me.
Didn't you replace him, though?
No.
No, because I wasn't. I was only sporadic.
I came on the heels of Jim Hunt.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
But you were in here as a co-host.
I was in here often, but yes, not. I believe I had no commitments from anybody at that point.
You pulled a Lennox Lewis.
Hey, it worked out for him, too.
Well, I guess.
Anyway, I'm glad we're one big happy family now.
Well, we have much to discuss.
Yes, we do.
A great deal.
Let's begin with the big story, I guess, is the Mario Lemieux conversation, discussion, proclamation. More of a proclamation than anything else. General comments before we get into it. Let me read it. I read it earlier, but for those of you just joining us on that one, I think most people that follow hockey have read the quotes. But here's, in essence, what Mario had to say. The NHL had a chance to send a clear and strong message that those kinds of actions are unacceptable and embarrassing to the sport. It failed. If the events relating to Friday night reflect the state of the league, I need to rethink whether I want to be a part of it. There is an excerpt of Mario Lemieux's statement. General terms. Good on him, Damian?
Oh, yeah. I really think so. And frankly, I'm stunned at the number of people who are out there saying, well, he has Matt Cook on his team. What right does he have to speak? Mario Lemieux has more right to speak on any matter in the world of hockey I can think of than pretty much anyone else. Who has more of a right to speak on hockey than Mario Lemieux?
Wayne and Mario would be 1 and 1A.
Mario still owns a team.
Yeah.
Mario saved the Pittsburgh Penguins. Without Mario, there is no Pittsburgh Penguins. There is no NHL marquee franchise right now.
Now, he may have saved them in part to get paid, but he did save them.
He
did save them. When he speaks, people will listen, and he does have a pulpit from which to speak. The comparable would be Gretzky, and as you say, Gretzky is not a governor. He is not an owner. He is not actively involved in the league at this moment. It's an interesting way of doing things. I think it's odd to kind of do it as a pronouncement, whatever we want to call it, a release, rather than. He's obviously kind of end run whatever the process is in the NHL, whatever you think of it. There are governor's meetings. People do sit around and discuss things. One can raise issues there. He has decided to go public, as he once did about the quality of the game, and that was, that when he was a player, and that was the right thing to do.
We called it the beer hockey league.
Yeah,
or something.
Garage league.
And that was important when he said that.
And he was right.
He was right, and he may well be right about this. However, it does... It's hard to get away from the optics that he just got religion when his team was victimized. That there's been other stuff going on, and there are other things he could have commented on. I don't recall him commenting on any of those things. But suddenly, when the Penguins are victimized by old-fashioned goon hockey, it's like he got religion. So that would be the asterisk. I agree with the sentiment. I think it's good that he said it. I would rather have guys say things publicly than not say them. I would rather they were outside the boardroom for our purposes and for the purposes of the fans than inside the boardroom. But, I think you've got to kind of arch an eyebrow a little bit and say, where you been?
I will acknowledge that because I don't know the answer. But here's what I would say. Is it not possible that Mario has been quietly with the other governors, with Gary Bettman, discussing these kinds of things and his opinion on the way the game is going, and isn't seeing or hasn't seen the kind of response that he wanted, and through frustration or whatever other motivation, has finally decided, okay, my only avenue now is go public?
Could be. I can't answer that. Although it's interesting, one of the part of the reaction today, the kind of back channel stuff, has been many suggestions that he is not an active participant in the among the governors, that he's not going to meetings.
He isn't. Ken Sawyer goes to a lot of meetings for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Mario Lemieux's not alone that he doesn't go to meetings. A lot of these different guys don't necessarily go to every meeting or a lot of meetings.
I'd like to know why. And if only
because a lot of times it's just business issues.
Exactly.
And they send their team president.
There's nothing fundamentally important going on at these meetings.
Yeah.
Decisions aren't really being made at these meetings. It is essentially, as I am made to understand it by those who have been in many of these meetings, Gary sets the agenda, he preaches, and everybody else, and then you go play golf.
Well, and whether, you know, you can say, I mean, they had a meeting at the All-Star game. He wasn't there.
Okay.
But I don't think my sense of this, and it goes back to the last time that he spoke out, which was the Garage League stuff. This was not a, oh my, look what happened to my team this night, therefore I'm upset. This has been a slow building thing for Mario Lemieux. And if you look at the NHL these days, and if you go to their website, NHL.com, this league is promoting fighting on a greater basis than any time since I've been covering the league. So that's over 20 years. They actively say, go click here, watch this fight. Here were the big fights last night. This league, which, 2 years ago, in the wake of Don Sanderson's tragic death, was saying, we've got to look at fighting, is now gone 360 again, or 180, whatever it is, and saying, we love this stuff. And I think that's part of what anybody who's sensible about the game and loves the game is saying, this is not good.
Well, and again, from Mario's point of view, if this is the last, this is the last straw, I've tried to make my voice heard, no one's done it discreetly, that's also, that's one thing. Maybe that could be true. I'll tell you what it's not. It's not heat of the moment. He obviously slept on it, right?
Sure.
He did not. This is not him blurting something out to somebody after the game.
5 minutes after the game, right?
He sat down and thought about this and knew exactly what the impact would be. So it has been planned. It is contrived in a way. It is he's trying to get a rise out of somebody. I think it's legitimate to ask all those other questions, though. Without disputing whether or not he's right, because he is right. You do have to kind of ask the question.
Except when you ask that question, that's what a lot of people want to focus on. It conveniently means that no one's talking about the real issue, which is, why is this stuff going on, and why is the league not doing more about it? Mm. If you want to sit there and target Mario Lemieux and say, guy who's saying, what business is he? Then all that does is take us away from the far more important discussion.
Yeah, and it is, if you were trying to blur the lines on the other side, that's exactly what you would
do. And that's what they do every time.
You would attack the messenger one way or another.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let me present this our point for discussion. Which does not mean should not be meant to imply that I believe that this is even relevant. But it is being said that Mario Lemieux should not be in a position to critique the actions of the league when he employs somebody like Matt Cook, who is a repeat offender at these kinds of things, and very recently was slapped with a suspension. Does any of that matter, Damian?
It matters a little bit in that I despise the way Matt Cook plays the game, and I don't think he should be in the league. So I get that part. But on the other thing, I mean, Matt Cook, most of the time when he's done something wrong, he's been penalized and heavily. Now we can go back to the Mark Savard thing, and the one thing we can say over and over is, in the time under the rules, he was allowed to do what he did to Mark Savard. Now, every team has guys who take penalties in the league.
Right.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, I think, was when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, is that the way, would they want to play goon it up hockey? I don't know. But if you have a league that is promoting fighting and has every team has at least one, if not two or three thugs, and if you're going to sit there and say, okay, we're not going to play that way, it's going to be a very difficult way to exist. So I sort of see the Matt Cook thing. I sort of don't. But the other thing, again, it takes away from the real discussion that's necessary to have.
Yeah, but you can't argue that Mario Lemieux does not support Matt Cook. because he literally or figuratively signs his checks. So on some level, he supports Matt Cook. You know, he continues to employ him.
Well, let me ask you this. So does Larry Tannenbaum support Colton Orr playing for the Leafs?
Well,
George Gillette support having George Larrack playing for the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, yeah, probably. Yeah, the buck does stop at the guy who, if you are an owner, you do have whatever influence you choose to exert.
There's something to that. But having said that, if your coach, if Bilesma wants Matt Cook there,
or if Ray Shero,
the general manager, wants Matt Cook there, is Mario Lemieux? I guess he theoretically is in a definitive position to say no.
You can't completely wash your hands of it, though, Bob. You can't say. You know, and again, I haven't heard Mario say one word about Matt Cook. Maybe I'm missing something. Has he ever said anything about him through all of the incidents and suspensions?
I mean, if Mario was here right now, that'd be my first question.
Yeah. Okay, so then let's go further. Then so. Mike Ilitch employs Todd Bertuzzi. And we can go around and around and around. Whatever corporation it is owns the New York Rangers employs Sean Avery.
But if you're going to take a stand, if you're going to take a stand and say, okay, this is something here is fundamentally wrong.
But then no one can take a stand, Stephen.
Well, no, you can take the stand, but you always have, like anyone who takes a stand in anything, you have to account on some level for your own actions.
But name anybody then.
I'm not saying discredits what he's saying, but you've got to mention it. You've got to mention it and say, well, you know, on one hand, you are going to be the shining light leading us away from this Neanderthal hockey. And on the other hand, you employ, again, you know, you are the where the buck stops in theory, the least defensible hockey player in the league.
But here's where I think Mario is within his rights to say this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe at any point during Mario's statement did he point a finger or mention an individual player or an individual act.
No, he didn't.
No, he pointed the finger at the league.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a generic, this has got to stop. And I think it's okay. I think if you sat Mario down and said, okay, Mario, if this is going to stop, that also includes your guys, mm-hmm. including Matt Cook. And I would have to suspect that he would say, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
The minute the league announces we're not going to put up with this crap anymore, Matt Cook either will be out or Matt Cook will be suspended because he doesn't get it. And we already understand he doesn't get it.
Well, but presumably if the league were enforcing discipline on the level that Mario Lemieux implies he would like it enforced, you know, that's a convoluted sentence, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If they were acting the way he thought, Matt Cook would have had the boom lowered on him in such a way they probably wouldn't be playing.
Right.
At which I suspect Mario would have been fine with.
I don't know. I've never heard him address the subject, but I can you can extrapolate from that, I guess, and say, yeah, but I've never heard him say
again,
it.
I struggle with this issue. That's like I'm trying to think of a comparable idea, but like Mario Lemieux, his the standing he has in the game goes beyond today. It goes back a long, long time. It goes to what he did as a player, how he got through cancer, how he came back, how he saved the Penguins. Yeah, he had his own money online. How he's conducted himself on any number of levels.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just go. So he doesn't have to defend himself to anything. And if he can't speak, in my mind, there is not a single other person involved in the world of hockey that can speak. So then all of us better just shut up.
Well, and now, and I mentioned this to Damian earlier, does this, if the Andrew Ferentz comments pushed that door open, that door that's not supposed to open,
mm-hmm.
a little bit, Mario Lemieux just knocked it off its hinges.
It's
does anybody else? I know it's different, but it's the permission to talk outside of the code, outside of the accepted, in a public forum as opposed to privately. And who knows what they say privately.
But you know, Bob,
so does anybody else walk through that?
Well, we got two kind of contradictory forces on the go here right now, though. You have this Mario Lemieux and Ferentz and this idea that people are seeing things in the league to which they, you know, they feel strong. They have to object, even if it involves their own teammates, they're going to object, say,
right.
This is wrong. On the other hand, you have what Damian's talking about, which is the fight night stuff.
A league that's clearly, if not promoting it, then...
Oh, no. They're
marketing.
They're promoting.
And in the last little while, I've seen stuff more reminiscent of the 1970s than I've seen in a long time, which is not just, you know, fighting stupid fights or not just heat-of-the-moment fights or whatever. It's been tactical fighting to intimidate teams, lesser-talented teams trying to beat better teams. Boston's a very talented hockey team, but they, you know, the Canadians have had their way with them until the other night.
Well, the New York Islanders specifically called up this Michael Haley guy for that game. And he ran around and got Max Talbot in a fight and then skated to the other end and got Brent Johnson in a fight because Brent Johnson, I mean, this, I find this hilarious that the Islanders are claiming that this was somehow retribution for Rick DiPietro, who Rick DiPietro thought he was going to be the tough guy and came out smiling, laughing, I'm going to kick this guy's ass, and
in
one punch got knocked out. And somehow they were seeking retribution for that?
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff gets twisted in such ways that it doesn't even make, it's not even, it's like listening to Sarah Palin speak. It doesn't make any sense after.
Islanders won the hockey game. Bruins won the hockey game, yeah. Right? So the guys who gooned it up got the points as well.
Well, that's the dangerous thing from my perspective, is that there's clearly a reason to do this and reason for us to suspect there will be more of it, not less of it. And that's why I hesitate to say I'm puzzled by what the NHL is doing or not doing, because I've been puzzled for 20 years by their inactivity. But they are literally just sitting there with their arms folded and saying,
yep,
we don't care.
Yep, but yeah, if you let teams, we know from history, if you let teams do this, if you let teams win through intimidation,
they'll do it.
The Flyers won Stanley Cups doing it. You know, yep. Not that they didn't have talent, but it's one way of winning a hockey game.
You don't have to go back to the Flyers. How about the Anaheim Ducks? They won a Stanley Cup by beating everybody up.
Yeah, until they got to the final.
And then they had a lot of good hockey players as well. But that was they were the first team since the Philadelphia Flyers to be the most penalized team in the league and win the Stanley Cup. And that was only 4 years ago.
Yeah. The scary thing is, in my mind, is that this hasn't been a gradual progression. I suppose it has, but it was very gradual of a few more fights, a few more incidents, a few more of this, a few more of that. Now it's an explosion. And now we've gone from maybe one fight a game to 10 fights a game. Back to where the 1970s, where the bar was. And now I'm afraid that's what we're going to see. We're going to see 10 fights a game.
But you know what I would trace it to, and we've been talking about this all year, is you cannot make a good hit anymore and not have to fight.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And so now everything is taken as an affront, an offense that we have to get back at you for. So this is what you get.
Nothing's part of the game. Everything has retribution, right?
Right.
The break, and then we'll continue the discussion. The roundtable continues on Primetime. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network on Sirius 97, watching on Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I don't accept
to you, Damien.
No.
To you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Oh,
it's the radio program.
Thanks for the card.
You guys are Valentine's.
Didn't he give you a card?
No, he didn't. I'm hoping to get flowers later.
Damien was being attacked by the mouse over here earlier today.
Oh, yeah?
I got tangled.
You got tangled in the mouse.
Yeah.
And the mouse was moving across the table like it was alive. It was pretty scary, actually.
So all these cameras in here got me freaked out. They weren't here the last time I was here.
Have we got any word on the Batista's salary arbitration hearing yet? No? It's today. Jose Batista, the Blue Jays 54 home run guy, looking for a multi-year, trillion-dollar, billion, gazillion-dollar contract, which the Blue Jays have rejected, and now are in a position where they will accept the arbitrator's ruling and see how it goes. Is this the right strategy? Brunt, to you first.
Rather than preemptively locking him up to a long-term deal? I think it's not... I think it's an interesting strategy, let's put it that way, because this is one where Bautista could win the lottery, obviously. If he has a season anywhere approaching the season he had last year, if he hits, it's 35 home runs, then you say this guy is a legitimate, we now know what he is. He's a legitimate, a 30 home run guy who on a good year could hit 50 and in a great year could hit more than that. And then the world is his oyster. But, if he falls back just a little more than that, everybody's going to look back at everything he did before last year and say, that's the real guy. And his price will go down. And his options will be diminished slightly. And I'm not entirely sure that if I was the Blue Jays that I would mortgage the farm for Bautista at this stage.
Damien.
I think it's the right strategy. They just got rid of the guy who they paid way too much for when they thought he was going to be a great player, and that was Vernon Wells.
That's right.
I mean, they just got out from under that contract. Now, I don't know if Bautista is Wells. We don't know, do we?
No, well, and that's,
we
I think,
really don't know. I mean, there are these seasons in baseball, these one-offs, right?
Look, at when Vernon Wells signed his, you know, $20 million a year, $68 million, whatever it was, contract, I think my recollection is most baseball people figured he was going to be worth it.
There was no outrage at the time that I recall.
No. Well, number one, they had to, the optics of the ownership making a big investment in a player to keep a player was important, right? Just saying, we're going to keep our guy, here's our blue chipper. He is a very good player who's only going to get better, has not plateaued, could be the best center fielder in baseball with good offensive numbers.
Right. And that's where this one's a bit different too, isn't mm-hmm. it? He's not their signature guy, not yet. He's not their franchise player. He's not the guy they're going to put out in front of the public and say, buy tickets because you can watch this guy play.
I got news for you. If he's hit 25 home runs by the middle of next season,
they got a problem.
No. He's their guy. He's yeah. their franchise guy.
Well, and they do, and they have a problem if they haven't
oh,
signed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, he's going to free agency.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Jays' position, I guess, is in the middle of next season, if things are going great for Bautista, they're probably going to have to bite the bullet and pay him the big dollar. I don't know whether that's $15 million, $18 million, what the number is going to be.
But they've been down this avenue twice. First with Carlos Delgado, second with Vernon Wells. And it worked out badly both times.
Both times.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's the nature of this franchise and how much money they want to play. I mean, it doesn't matter if you have one of those contracts in the New York Yankees or the Boston Red Sox, Philadelphia Phillies really even now, right? Doesn't matter. If you're the Toronto Blue Jays, who kind of are styling themselves as what, if not a small market team, a mid-market team?
Well, that's a good question, because they aren't, right? They're in a big market, and they've got a big rich owner. So right.
Who claims he is prepared, or they are now prepared, to give Paul Beeston and Alex Anthopoulos a crap load of money. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is come and ask for it.
But were they out trying to sign Cliff Lee in the offseason?
They looked at it.
Yeah, but I don't think he was coming here anyway. Didn't want to come here.
No.
Well, they looked hard at the second baseman, right?
They looked hard at a bunch of guys.
But I think there's timing issues, and there's also, I think,
Greinke. They were allegedly in the bidding for Greinke.
They were definitely interested in, what's his name, Dan Ugla?
Yeah, yeah, they were in the Ugla bidding. But they're, you know, I think from both those guys' point of view, I think they understand that this is not a good money after bad situation. That you can't make a mistake and then say, well, forget, the owners aren't going to operate that way. It's not, they're not romantic. They want to investment spend here, right? They want to spend.
Right.
They're willing to spend if they think there's going to be a return, either on TV or in the stands or both. But they're not just going to throw money out there like George in the old days, like Steinbrenner in the old days.
I mean, ideally, the next big contract I think they want to give out, they want to be giving it to Brett Laurie or Kyle Drabek or one of those people, right?
Well, and you want to bridge those guys, you know, so you want to have control of those guys like they did with Romero last year. You want to lock up those guys through this part of their careers and take your shot with them. And then if there may be another stage for them. You might even lose them down the road.
And really, that was the strategy they used with Roy Halladay. And
yep.
At the end of the day, when you look at the whole picture, that was a pretty good strategy, wasn't it?
They got a lot of value out of that.
Yeah, they did.
Both in terms of locking it up during where he was really wasn't getting paid market value at the end of his contract in Toronto, and they got something for him. So that, to me, is the strategy you want.
Yeah, and look, Bautista is not a 22-year-old who is emerging. He is a 29-year-old who had one big year.
Right.
Which is not to say he can't have another big year or a series of big years, but you don't know. And
I mean, name the other guy who's done that.
There isn't.
Well, not in the non-steroid issue era.
When the roids were out there.
You guys don't mind if I don't get involved in that one.
Non-steroid.
40-year-olds who came out of nowhere.
Well, Brady Anderson's the class.
Brady Anderson
had 50 home runs.
Yeah, 9 to 50 or something.
Yeah, and then went
now,
back.
Now, we all know that there are no steroids in Major League Baseball anymore, so we don't have to worry about this, right?
I don't know. There's no steroids
in the Olympics, right?
All we know is they test.
That's all we know, is they test, and usually Hispanic minor leaguers get caught.
Which is much like the Olympics, where they get teen Bulgarian gymnasts, right?
Right, yeah. Right. The big Russians and the big Americans just shoot through every time.
Beyond that, we don't know anything. We don't know what's going on with roids. Late last summer, I would say August or so, people started asking, think Jose Bautista's on roids? It's a legitimate question.
A lot of people didn't think it was a legitimate question. I thought it was legitimate.
Yeah, you have some first-person experience in that, I believe. Yeah,
I do. I always thought it was. And you know what? I thought the best response was from Bautista himself, who said, I can see why people are asking that question.
Well, and the thing is, look, it was a bolt out of the blue. There's no question. If people
well,
thought
it was
he,
very Brady Anderson.
If people thought he had that potential, he would not have been playing in Toronto.
In a dirty, dirty sport. What has been a dirty sport?
Historically a dirty sport, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So... Anyway, what would you do with Bautista?
Well, I think they're taking the right course. I would assume that they looked seriously at a 3-year contract. And here's what I would say. I would say they were probably many millions of dollars away from what Bautista's agent wanted, and probably 2 years away. My guess is Bautista's agent wanted 5 years at max dollars. I mean, there are no max dollars, but in the 15 to 18 kind of range.
Well, Cliff Lee got 138 over 6.
Yeah, but a pitcher, though.
Yeah.
Different kind of an animal.
But they wanted, they wanted to be in whatever range Pujols is going to be.
We were probably
looking at something.
They're trying to figure out the Pujols range.
Yes.
We were probably looking at something getting towards a $100 million contract, right?
For 5 years?
Yeah, pretty pushing it.
Right?
So yeah.
I'd say 85 to 100 in that range.
And they just got rid of that contract.
And that, you're very true. It's very true. It may have been a part of it. But I think they looked at that and they said, you know, we'd give you 3, maybe at, if I was them, I'd say 3 at 12 to 15.
But I'm Bautista and or his agent. I would do exactly what they're doing as well. I'm not going to lock in with the Toronto Blue Jays for 3 years when, I think I might be able to. If he hits 35 this year, he wins the lottery.
What happens if he hits 15?
Then it's trickier. It's way trickier. But if you're him, you're going to gamble on that, right?
That's the money flying away.
But it's the absolute mother.
Now he's a $7 or $8 million a year guy.
Well, maybe a little more than that, but he has the chance to win the mother load here. And I think if I was him, I would be confident that I'm going to go out there and hit 30 and let's go.
Let me ask you this. Vernon Wells isn't there anymore. There's some young bats around him who they think are going to produce, but they don't know. The catcher, they don't know.
Aaron Sibbia, Lind, Snyder.
These are guys... So all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know how much protection Vernon Wells was offering, but he was another bat in the lineup.
That's true.
Now all of a sudden, if you're going to pitch around anybody.
You're going to pitch around Bautista. No question.
So he may not even get the chance.
Look, here's the other issue that Anthopoulos and the Blue Jays have to look at. I know they've locked up Romero, but they got a crap load of young players who they think are the nucleus of the championship teams to come. They're not all going to come up all at once, but the pay scale ain't going down on this team. If this team is what Anthopoulos and Beeston think it is, not only are they going to have to add in free agents in terms of economics, they're probably going to have to spend an extra $40 to $60 million just to keep the guys.
Well, or to lock them up, I say, get them through the early arbitration and... Yeah, you know, so it's worth it for it was a good deal for Ricky Romero to sign. He makes more money than he would make otherwise.
Look at all the 20-year-olds.
You lock them up, you get some certain, and they can kind of let this sort itself out.
Their whole pitching staff is all babies who haven't gone through, haven't even been free agent eligible.
Well, I mean,
entire staff: Morrow, Drabeck, Cecil.
I mean, even look at a guy like Morrow. I mean, they shut him down, and they're talking about holding him to 175 innings this year.
If Morrow is half what I think he is, I mean, he's going to be Doc kind of money.
So, you're talking about winning in three years, right? Trying to win in 3 years.
Well, I think they're trying to win next year, 2012.
Maybe.
I don't think so. I mean, try, which means start spending to put you in a position.
Well, if that's what they're doing.
And if they expand the postseason, the playoffs, for sure you go after it in 2012.
But then there's your answer. If you're winning in 2012,
then
you
go
better
sign
this guy.
That's the mitigating factor. Mm. That's the part of the equation that I'm waiting for, is I keep hearing, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this. But these are the kinds of moves you make if you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I get getting rid of Vernon Wells. I get that. Even though he's a very good player who can still play center field adequately and is the nucleus of your club, the economics are so serious, I'm prepared to let you go. Get rid of him. Even though you don't really have a replacement. You got a guy, but you don't really have a replacement. Their outfield could be brutal defensively. I mean, like, brutal.
They're going to have trouble catching it.
But at some point, you got to make a move. You got to show. And you can't keep taking 35-year-old retread relief pitchers and, you know, let's get 10 of them and hope one of them works.
But are you putting your money still? Is putting your money into a 29-year-old, potentially one-hit wonder, a guy that you liked when you got him but was not that, you know, again, not universally liked. You saw something in him. He has an unbelievable season for the ages. Is that where you spend your money? I'm still not so sure.
Batista was a fluke. They acquired him.
Yes.
He wasn't supposed to be anything, just a bit player. Got a chance to play in September of 09. Hit 10 home runs in the month of September, had a good spring training, and all of a sudden, he's got a job.
So the play then...
And then he goes berserk.
We're doing a lot of humming and hawing here. Nobody really wants... The play here then, it sounds to me, is he gets what he gets in arbitration, then you trade him.
Well, he gets what he gets in arbitration, and you... Well, he's a free agent at the end of the year, so he's a rental.
So you trade him as a rental.
That's not... I'll tell you what, if who's his agent? Is it...
I honestly don't know, Bob.
I thought it was Boris. If it's Boris, they're in trouble. So, but whoever is agent, if they don't have a deal with him by June, I would say, Damien, you're right.
Right.
You must trade him before the trade deadline.
To maximize him as an asset.
Can't let him walk away. And he's going to walk away. If he doesn't have a contract,
I can see that.
He walks away.
And at some point, he's going to say, I want to play for a winner. I played for Pittsburgh. I played for Toronto. Is there some place we can
let me tell you. Jose Bautista, the New York Yankees are salivating right now at the prospect of Jose Bautista, if he's anywhere near what he was last year, going and playing for them. Latino outfielder with big power.
I mean, to me,
that's New York all over it.
The model here is now the Tampa Rays, right? And so what you want is a group of 5, 6, 7 players, 3 of them pitchers, 5 of them position players who are about the same age and grow as a core together, kind of like that Cleveland Indian model.
I think the model would be the Tampa
so this
Rays.
Guy's too old, then.
If you could drive some more revenue, so you could hold the team together a little longer.
A little bit longer,
yeah, because people don't show up there. So I think potentially here, the theory would be that you could have that team drive enough revenue through the stadium and keep it together for a while.
We got a break. Primetime Bullets. When we come back, it's the radio program on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
$1,000 if you can hit that note. It's McCown, Cox.
You go first.
Brunt. No. I can't. I know I can't. I'm not staying. Sting's underwear must be too
tight. Can you do a Frankie Valli falsetto?
No. Can't do that either. No. Used to be able to.
No. I think I could sound like Dylan did last night, doing Maggie's Farm. Did you hear him on the Grammys?
No.
I can do that.
It wasn't...
Well, he's always sounded... You know, he's... Bob Dylan as singer has
could
been...
You understand the lyrics?
You could, actually. He was pretty clear with the lyrics, but he was sounding pretty gravelly last night. I was great. It was fantastic, actually, but it was him. That's what I just don't need as much range, as I'm saying. It's Sting. You only need about a 2-note range.
A friend of mine met Bob Dylan at a party. At Gordon Lightfoot's house, actually.
Is this a joke?
No, it's a true story.
Guy goes into a party, meets Bob Dylan.
Well, I guess he knew he was going to be there. Dylan's a friend of Gordon Lightfoot's. So Dylan is at this party. It's a house party. And Dylan is standing in the kitchen. And Gordon Lightfoot comes up and says, you want to meet Bob Dylan? He goes, oh, man, that'd be great. So he goes up. And I guess Dylan had a couple. probably more than a couple. Anyway, he goes up and he says, Bob, and introductions. And Dylan says... Guy said, I didn't understand a single word, but I didn't want to look like I had no idea. So I, yes, Mr. Dylan, he said. And apparently that was Dylan all night. Anyway, that's my Bob Dylan story. Time for the bullets, little things that sometimes become big things but rarely do, especially when Brunt is here. Item. Ooh. Peter Forsberg calls it quits. Length of return, 120 minutes. What do we make of this? Bad idea at the first place.
He's a different guy. He really is. And I think I suspect two things. One, the pain. This guy has terrible feet problems. He really.
But why bother, Damien?
Well, because I think he wanted to give it one last shot. But
wait a second.
Like
he's
a lot
been
of,
playing hockey in Sweden, right? Or is it like rec league?
Not the same. Different thing entirely. So he wanted to give it one last shot. But beyond that, I think most great players, not all, but most great players... don't like being ordinary players, and he was going to be an ordinary player.
But you see the Adam Foote quotes. It's interesting, right? Because it just like it shocked him that he was quitting. That he just had no clue, and he'd been just talking to him on the plane coming back from the last game, and
he's
had
a different guy.
And you know, this sounds like that there's some level in his head that he was playing fine, and that he Foote said he would have helped the team, and I don't think that's just I think he meant it. I think they'd love to let the guy try and round into form and into game form, but there must be some level in Forsberg's head that he knew he was not going to be able to reach.
Can I tell you what I think Peter Forsberg was?
Can I stop you?
Nope.
Okay, go ahead then.
Toughest hockey player I've ever seen play.
Real tough. Like not phony and baloney tough.
Yeah. Not what we were talking about before.
Not fisticuffs tough.
Toughest hockey player I've ever seen. Could take a beating. And because he took a beating, it shortened his career. He lost his spleen in the middle of the Stanley Cup final. Or something like that. Or close.
Well, he didn't exactly lose it. I mean, it was removed.
We knew where it was.
Removed.
He knew where it was.
Behind the fridge.
Anybody see my spleen?
It wasn't in his body anymore.
So I can't find this thing, but I mean, I was reading this earlier. So how many goals do you think Forsberg scored over his career?
Oh, I hate when you ask me questions like this. I'd say somewhere between around 300.
He had like 600 assists, I think. You want to guess?
No.
No, I don't even want to guess.
I think it was 267 or something.
That's not a bad guess, then.
No, it's not bad.
It's more. He was more than a point a game.
Yeah. Oh, he was a playmaker, more than a goal scorer.
Yeah, but I still thought he had more goals than that.
No.
I was very surprised by that. Which is not as you know, I mean, I have the utmost respect for him, like you. I mean, I enjoyed watching him play as much as anybody. And I mean, people call me, you know, they think I'm like a pansy, and I don't like physical hockey.
You're not
players.
A tough guy.
Well, are we going to go through this again? 2004 revisited? We spent 2 years doing this every day. Do you want to go down that road again?
I can tell you one thing. It's not going to happen every day.
That's right.
Split it.
You can still get out of this contract, you know. Not that anybody will want you anymore.
You see where...
Assess your options.
There aren't enough bridges in the world.
That's right.
Ronaldo calls it quits. My God, that's about 5 years too late, isn't it?
Yeah, he kind of let himself go. well, he did.
He just did a little bit of a Diego Maradona thing.
He did.
Without the terrible drug bust.
But you know, he was one of those guys who his brief shining moment wasn't that long. Although he did win a World Cup, but boy, when he was great, he was unbelievable. He was like a physical specimen, a guy that. When he had the ball.
Best player in the world.
Yeah, he was of a certain, but he wasn't like a Pele or a Maradona.
No.
He wasn't that kind of a guy. He was like a physical force so that if, you know, when he started to run at goal, there was just nothing you could do about it. He was amazing when he was good. But, you know, remember how weird the 98, the World Cup, the fame, when they announced him in the lineup and then he, just because it wasn't there and then Brazil lost to France? Weird stuff with him.
I never saw much with him, but I always, whenever I showed up, say, okay, now I'm going to see it. And nothing ever happened.
Yeah, because if he wasn't playing, he was just kind of standing there.
But that's, well, that's soccer.
And it's striker.
Nothing ever happens.
Well.
You can watch for a week of
Sundays.
That's
a bigger discussion than I imagine we're going to have.
Oh, no, we'll have that discussion. It just won't be tonight. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
Will you be here again tomorrow?
No, I will not be here tomorrow. I'll be here next week.
Will you be here next week?
No, I won't.
This is all very confusing. I'm the only one, apparently, who will be here all the time. That'll do it for us. A good night from Toronto.